Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Tom Davis here, host of the No Bad Dogs podcast. Today we have another great podcast for you guys. Sorry, I took last week off. I'm going through some training, recording equipment. Some of the stuff I got wasn't recording right. So, got an awesome podcast that we did last week. Anyway, with a couple dog owners who are really struggling. They've been through 3 dog trainers, a behavioralist, medicate the dog, don't medicate the dog, correct the dog, never correct the dog, just bouncing these people around, and they're just struggling. They're just trying to figure, hey, what do I do? This is something that you guys will hear over and over and over and over again on this podcast and in my dog training videos, where people are just getting thrown around into training camps that really isn't fit for them. So we talk a little bit about how to pick the right dog trainer for you. And of course, I walk this couple through on how to handle the dog that they have in front of them. And we kind of like go over some myth busting there too about dog behavior and how they learn, and my experience and what these dog owners have experienced themselves. But before we get into that, I just wanted to say that I'm starting to do Q&As on the podcast as well. So all you guys have to do is go to my podcast, review it, and in the review, you just write question, and then I'm going to be answering these questions at the end of this podcast. So if you ask questions, I'm going to pick 3, and I'm going to answer each podcast. I'm going to answer 3 questions that you guys leave in the podcast reviews. So yeah, let's get into the podcast.
You've been dealing with reactivity. You went to a positive only trainer, and you guys have been working on some redirection stuff at 8 months, and the positive only trainer had a behavioralist come in. The behavioralist took the dog to another facility.
No, didn't take that in order to socialize him. Maybe we could try to get him to go to another facility, like daycare, just to be around dogs and learn that. And then that facility was like, no, we don't take it. Not comfortable being around people.
Okay. So they
said no.
Yeah, they just said no.
Yeah. So then we went over to the trainer's house once, and was able to interact with smaller, but he was very accommodating too. Like, he wanted to play with her. He wants to play with our dogs. He's respective of our dogs, particularly the older one who tells him, like, I don't want to play. He's very respective. He does try to mouth on our bigger dog, just like the normal shepherd mouth play.
Yeah.
And she'll correct him all much. So he's in that space. He's good with us. He's affectionate. He will listen for the most part, except when he gets in these really amped up situations, and like literally a bomb could go off and he is just still fixated on whatever it is, like locked in.
Okay. So what was the, so you went with the trainer, and then, and this is all at like 4 months. This was between
like 4.5 months to basically the last time we probably saw her was like 6.5 months.
Because we've just been waiting on this, because there was such a backlog to go see this other doctor.
Yeah, and between that time, she's like, okay, well, I'm not going to come over anymore. Just keep working on some other things. And we're like, great. And then my parents came into town a couple weeks ago, and new people. He tried to go after my dad, who he's never seen before. We didn't have him on his leash. That was our stupid fault. But that's when we started his medicine. That's when we started prong collar, because we're like, we have something.
Right. What was a behavioral doctor? Is that what they called her?
It's some type of like vet that specializes in behavioral prescribing meds, behavior modification. But when you look through the materials again, it's like all this positive stuff and respecting their boundaries, and God forbid you use a prong collar or anything else. But then we talk to people that experience with German Shepherds, working police dogs, and they're like, no, you got to use a prong collar. You got to tell them like what's right, what's wrong, and get their attention.
Yeah. So, Yeah, to some degree, I agree in all of that. I mean, there's always like I try to play devil's advocate where there's always like a really, and of course it's frustrating for dog owners because they get in this dilemma where you guys have worked with a positive only trainer. Positive only trainer basically said, I can't deal with this. And then here's a behavioralist. The behavioralist is like, I can't deal with this. And now you're going to another behavioralist that started to prescribe your dog medication, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So prior to that, what did I'm interested to know the third trainer or the second behavioralist or whatever. What I don't mean to laugh. It's just it's frustrating.
So frustrating to us because we know he can be such a good dog. He's super smart. We notice these things around like 4 months and in his puppy school to where something like freaked him out. And so we're like, was that it? Was it his genetics? We have no idea. And so we're just trying to throw stuff at the wall to see what sticks. In the meantime, he's getting older. He's getting bigger. He's getting more set in some of these habits that we want to break. But we know he's a super good dog. It's his ability in certain situations.
So like for example, like when I take him for his walks and we have the prong collar on him, if I see somebody and if I start to see that person or get fixated on that person from watching your videos and stuff like that, you know, I try and get him to sit and turn away and then like walk back and forth real quickly to where he's heeled next to me and like turning around and, you know, so he's not fixated on that person right away. Mm-hmm. And then like sometimes when it comes to when we're crossing parallel, that's when he'll start to lunge towards those people. And then, you know, I'll pop him with the prong collar and then, you know, sometimes he does get reactive to where he'll jump up and like, you know, what my wife was saying is just immediate, like turn and, you know, kind of try and snap at me or whoever has him at the time. So,
right. Yeah. That's common redirection. Yep. So, okay. All right. So the last behavioralist you guys left with, did that behavioralist work with him at all? Or she just,
they did a little bit time. Like she came over to the house twice, would do the let me come in the door, let me see how long it takes for him to get used to me. And then we met her and the initial positive reinforcement dog trainer at her house of like, it's a different yard, you've seen these people before. Mm-hmm. Can we get him to be more comfortable in a shorter period of time, which he would. Then the three of us, took him to another lady's house to say, hey, well, maybe he could play with her dog who's very neutral. So they're both on the leash. They ended up not playing because the behavior lady was like, I don't like how he's acting. Let's take them on a walk together. So we took them on a walk together. And mm-hmm. I was like, kind of in the, and she's like, well, he didn't seem comfortable walking with me. And I'm like, well, he doesn't really know you. But I mean, he wasn't reacting to like the mail truck driving by or other things. Mm-hmm. And so he's gotten better at new situations and things like seeing a garbage can. He's not as scared of it, or seeing a new box in our house. He'll go up and investigate it. He might bark once, but then he'll stop.
Yeah. What were you using when you were walking with the behavioralist that time?
So we were using a harness because that's what they told us in puppy class, like the harness and all that. Well, using a harness, I'd gotten at least one redirect bite on me. Mm-hmm. And the harness just, that didn't seem to get his attention at all. It was one of the harnesses that you clip in the front.
Yeah.
And okay. Yeah.
All right. I've heard enough. I try to, you know, figure out what you guys have done so far to kind of know what's the dog thinking, where's the dog at. So, you know, is he fixed?
He's not fixed yet.
Okay. That definitely plays a role, but not a huge role. The reality is you guys are lacking balance. What you really, really need is you need some sort of balance here where, and I'm, you know, and I always tell people this, like when I'm working with the dog, I'm using 99% positive training, like positive reinforcement training. Right. Mm-hmm. So rewarding the dog, no pressure on the dog. I'm giving the dog space physically, verbally with food and balls and toys. I'm trying to do all those things. And then, of course, I have balance on the other side where if a dog makes a mistake, then, of course, it's my responsibility to let them know that that's wrong. And I don't have to go too far down the rabbit hole to explain to you why the things aren't working for you guys. It's very clear that what you're doing isn't working even after the third person coming in. You could have, and I know this doesn't help now, but, you know, save a lot of time and money just by working with a balanced dog trainer that corrected this puppy at 4 months and just said, hey, man, quit the crap. This isn't happening. Now you're dealing with pent-up frustration. So it's almost like a dog continues to build and build and build. So it's an intact 8-month. I mean, you're dealing with like a teenager at its finest right now. You're dealing with a senior in high school running around, you know, trying to push back on everything. And up until this point, you guys haven't had the ability and the communication to tell him that what he's doing is wrong and reinforce it. So there's a, you know, there's a big difference. If what's his name, by the way?
Oh, it's Fletcher.
I love that. Fletcher. Oh, Fletcher. That's funny. So that's kind of like what you're dealing with is with Fletcher. He's not getting that control that he needs in order to maintain stability. So when he goes out and makes a decision and you don't like it and it's not okay and he shouldn't be doing it, you haven't been able to discourage that behavior. You've only been able to pull him away. So when you're pulling him away with the harness, so say he goes towards the fence and Fletcher's barking at the other dog at the fence, which is becoming a huge problem because you got bit recently. And obviously the neighbors are probably like, okay, this is not good. There's a German Shepherd coming through my fence. So basically what you're doing right now with even if you have equipment on him, such as the harness, you're pulling him away. So his head controls momentum. His head controls the conversation. Like if I were to turn my back right now and talk to the wall, you guys might be able to hear me, but you know that I'm not talking to you necessarily, right? You know what I mean? Like we're not having a conversation. So anyway, it's kind of what happens with the harness is you're pulling him back on the harness and he's still talking. It's kind of like dragging a drunk guy out of the bar. He's still going. Like you're not fixing anything. He's still upset outside. You're not sitting down, smacking him upside the head and said, hey, what are you doing? You think that this is appropriate? You're like, this is not okay. You need to calm down because of these reasons. Well, and here's what you're going to do. Oh, right. Just really, you know, figuratively speaking, that's kind of like what happens when you're using a harness with a frustrated dog is you're just dragging them away and actually building more frustration. Mm-hmm. Right. So I know you're not using the harness outside as much or at all because you're going up and you're grabbing his collar and that's where he's getting frustrated. So he feels, so there's no doubt about it. It's a perfect storm of frustration, like an 8-month-old intact, somewhat working line German Shepherd, you know, being reactive. And so without, and I would agree that at the ages that you were working with the dog, especially at that 4-month mark to where he's at now, 4 months later at 8 months, it's a critical time to be developing your relationship with the dog, the foundation, you know, the principles, all that stuff. But the problem is you guys haven't been able to effectively show him what he can and can't do, right? So that's what you're dealing with the most. So I know that you said that the prong collar you guys started, I'm assuming after watching my videos, because all the German Shepherds that I work with, you know, a lot of them do either A, come in with prong collars, or B, they get a prong collar. And the reason why that is I primarily work with dogs like Fletcher or dogs that are very similar to Fletcher on a behavioral scale. So they're getting equipment mainly because their owners are already coming in with like, we're spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. We're like, we have to work with a trainer or someone that can help us figure out his code and how to communicate with him, or he needs to go to an experienced handler that gives him a job, or he's not staying with us. Like, so, and that's why we're just like at this point, but we know like deep down, he can be a really good dog.
Yeah.
We just figure out like the proper code of what is, like what we need to be doing with him.
Yeah, because I would like almost, like I said, since we've watched your videos, like I would actually attribute like his type of personality to those two individuals. I think the lady was from Michigan that had the German Shepherd.
Chief, it was like Chief and then Dante was the other one.
That's when I was watching that, I was just watching it with clear eyes because I was like, you know, I didn't want to sugarcoat Fletcher. I'm like, wow, that's if Fletcher was in your facility in that door that way and you came up to him, he would act the exact same way where he would like try and jump and lunge at you. And
yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. And that's why I create that content is because you guys are, that's why I create any content, to be honest with you, is you guys are sitting there going, you're working with a positive only trainer, which I don't want to take anything away from some, because I've met some really good positive only trainers that, you know, are great and could do circles around me with obedience, but I don't do obedience anyway, really. I don't, that's not what fixes a lot of behavioral problems. It's a huge part of it. But I just wish that your trainer in the beginning would have said, this is developing into something I can't handle immediately, instead of trying to throw treats on the ground to discourage the behaviors, you know? All right, you guys, really quick, I want to interrupt this podcast just to say, if you haven't signed up for the No Bad Dog Members Club, it is a subscription-based, it's $19.99 a month, and all it is, guys, is all the unreleased footage that we're recording for YouTube. We'll record sometimes 3 or 4 times a week and put one video out that's 20 minutes. Not only are you getting that full video and the full process of how we actually worked with that dog from soup to nuts for the hour session, sometimes more, but you're also getting all of the other sessions. So literally every single thing that we're filming behind the scenes and so on and so forth is getting uploaded there at least once a week. It's like I said, it's $19.99 a month. It's not a lot, but you can join the community, hang out with us. Link is in the description below. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, I stretched it out to where, you know, it's so critical, but then we wasted time. Yep. And he's not the kind of dog that would benefit from that type of training. There's many dogs that will, but he's just a bull in a china shop. Teenager example. Yes, like sometimes when you tell him, he'll, you know, like go like that and just be like, basically giving me the middle finger of like, I'm on
it. That's right. That's right. And that's what you got. So anyway, so besides all of that, yeah, so like Dante, good example. Like Dante, that German Shepherd, that's a recent upload on my YouTube channel that I did, I think last week. That's a dog that came in very similar to what you guys are dealing with. And he came in and he's like, you know, and his parents are sitting there just holding the lead. They're just holding on. They're just like, they don't know what to do. And it's not any, I mean, it is their fault, but of course it's ignorance because they didn't know what to do, which is why they're with me, right? So they're just sitting there holding on and he's barking at me and he's hitting the fence and he's trying to come after me and his muzzle's shaking and he's just showing his teeth. And then they had a prong collar, but it was on wrong. So it wasn't fit properly. It wasn't the right size. And so I just put a regular Herm Springer on and then I corrected him. And then if you watch that video, he had that moment. He was like,
yeah.
Oh shit, for real? I'm like, yeah, dude, what are you doing? And then he kind of took a deep breath. And so the reality is dogs that are like that sometimes need a handler that can control the dog because they almost like self-mutilate themselves mentally. Mm-hmm. Because I can handle that dog. I can get that dog. You know, after working with that dog, I was like, okay, now I've kind of opened up Pandora's box to start working with this dog. We kind of have an even playing field. The dog wasn't trained. But the dog wasn't reacting to people coming in. The dog wasn't reacting to me on the leash. The dog wasn't bouncing in front of me. But, you know, when they go home, that dog will probably continue to be 50% as reactive as he was because the owners just can't get on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the frustrating part with my career is I'm not really a dog trainer. I'm a teacher. I have information that helps dogs because I've been doing it for as long as I have. And I have a better skill set of explaining to dog owners how to fix the problem or how to work with it. Right. So my point is there's just certain dogs who need a certain handler. It doesn't sound to me that you guys are at that point. It just sounds to me that you haven't done anything about it properly, which makes total sense why it's not working. So it's kind of an advantage to you because you're just starting to scratch the surface of what you should be doing with Fletcher. So let's break it down. I think
first and foremost, and we can talk about this later, or you can email me a picture, whatever's easiest for you guys, but making sure you have the right fit prong collar, making sure that that is where you need it to be, nice and snug. It's very simple. It shouldn't be big enough where you can pull it over the dog's head. It's got to be nice and snug right behind the dog's ears. The other thing is there's an intervention stage that I have with dogs, all right? And this intervention stage is kind of it's been polarizing sometimes in the dog training community, which I try to pull myself out of as much as humanly possible, but it's kind of polarizing where I certainly will use aversives and I will use some sort of compulsion to shut a dog behavioral down, like Dante. There was no context of what he was doing was necessarily wrong. I didn't have a relationship with him, but that's a dog that's literally trying to kill me for no reason, and the owners are just holding on. So then what I did is I literally corrected him for that behavior without any context of the dog knowing what they were doing is wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So that then gave me an opportunity to move forward. So he's coming in, he's screaming, he's yelling, he's rah, 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 I gotta get to you. You're enemy number one, right? And I just said, hey, stop it, man. Bang, corrected him. So that was like my intervention. Like, there was no context. I didn't really care that he knew what he was doing is wrong because I had to basically shut him down so he can think. There's some dogs you don't want to do that to, right? Like a more, like a super, super, super insecure, fearful dog. But nonetheless, I guess my point is when you're doing all of this, you have to make sure that the dog knows what you want him to do clearly in most circumstances, unless it's an intervention. I call it like an intervention correction, where it's going to be outside of my normal, you know, rules, if you will. Same thing with the remote collar. If I have a dog that's somebody, like, for an example, you guys come in with this dog and you're like, hey, we've been working with two behavioralists, one trainer. We're at the end of our rope. We really don't know what to do. We want to start over. He's a sweet dog. He's only 8 months old, blah, blah, blah. And he's trying to come after me like I am murdering somebody that he loves. And it's like, holy crap, dude. I'm going to correct him so I can meet him where he's at and refresh. So it's not even necessarily a correction. Technically it is, but it's more of a disruptor. He's doing this and he's kicking and screaming and I'm just coming over and I'm correcting him and I'm like, stop. And then they take it like Dante. It was a beautiful, we caught that on film and it was beautiful. He just took a deep breath and he goes, oh. So my point is you guys have to start teaching him different behaviors to get him to do the things that you want him to do alternatively, which would be a heel, which would be a leave it, which would be a recall. The recall would get, I just had a conversation with the dog owner yesterday about this. The recall would get him off the fence, right? If you had the ability to reinforce your recall sustainably and effectively, you would get away from that reactivity at the fence, right? The other thing is the heel command. So just like you were saying, when you're out on the walk, you're kind of doing these directional changes and this calibration that you see on my videos, which is a great opportunity for you to kind of redirect his attention. So you want to find his motivator. So whatever he loves, if whether it's food or a ball or a tug, and if he doesn't love those things, you still have to kind of push him through. You know, he's still got to eat, if you will. It's like a kid, kid hasn't eaten breakfast, lunch, and dinner in 3 days. I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want this. You got to eat. Just take it. You know, it's like, so my point is if he's not taking any type of motive, you can just reward him by like, hey, good heel. That's it. It's all you got. It's okay. So when you're out with him, one question I always ask dog owners is if he's reactive on the leash and he's pulling on the leash and he's kind of all over the place, you have to have a really good heel and you have to have a really good break and you have to have the ability to diversify those two behaviors. So he's got to know when you say heel, he's on your left side walking at your heels, loose leash. That's the name of the game.
And that's what we do. We're walking with a heel, like we taught him now that he I keep it loose in my hand and he's by my left side on my thigh the whole time. And what I not to cut you off, but like we were doing the food motivation, like when he would heel or when we would tell them to sit beforehand or just walk in and then stop. And I would give, we would give them food. But then, like, once, you know, I saw this, how he bit my wife the other day, I was like, okay, when I take him for a walk this time, I'm not going to give him any treats because I want to see, make sure all the training that we've been doing has actually been ingrained in his head. And to me, what I've been seeing the last couple of days is that it has, because, I mean, like, before we go through the door, you know, he knows to sit. He knows to wait until I tell him to come through the door and then sit down. And then, you know, he'll look at me outside and then I'll tell him, you know, I'll tell him, let's go. And then, you know, I'll do the redirection. We'll do the heel. And I don't even have to say any commands. I can just stop now. And he'll just, he knows to sit literally right next to me and look at me, which is awesome. And then I'm like, okay, cool. Thanks, bud. I was like, all right, let's go. And then we'll do some more redirection, because I just want to make sure that he wasn't just completely food driven. I want to make sure that these tools that we're using is actually working in his head.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, what, that's what you want to be doing. And you don't, and you don't have to bring out food, and you don't see, it's the same thing, is you don't have to use food because your dog should just know the behavior, and you shouldn't have to use tools if your dog understands the behavior as well. But there's certain circumstances that you can't control where you see like another off-leash dog running around, and then, well, you've never trained for that, and that's going to be hard. So you need to be able to control for that. So that's a lot of what, excuse me, that's a lot of what you should be doing, is making sure that you have the fundamental behaviors to teach him to do something other than the reaction. So don't go out just into that fix-it mode and say, I'm going to correct you and I'm going to punish you for every time you do this. So again, like when I have a dog in, if I go into an intervention stage to kind of start a clean slate, it's different. But when I have a dog in that's, you know, a little bit reactive or is going a little bit crazy on the leash, but not anything that's dangerous, what I'll do is I'll start my, if you can't hear it, I have my landscaper outside.
Yeah, it's
right outside my window. Anyway,
yeah.
Sorry about that. So when I go out, like one of the first things I do in almost all my videos, as long as it's safe for me, and if it's not safe for me, I just have the dog owners do it. Dante, that's what I did. I said, okay, I don't feel safe with this dog, but I don't want to leave the muzzle on this dog, and I don't want to handle him without the muzzle just yet, because I don't want him to make a mistake, because it'll ruin our relationship. I'm not like, people always think like, oh, like take the muzzle off. I'm like, you got to realize that if you take the muzzle off a dog, same thing with you guys can muzzle condition too. If you're worried about the redirection, is once a dog bites you, your relationship changes, and it's hard for you to kind of stay on that playing field. So anyway, when you go out with him, those are the types of things that you should be doing at a very micro level. And it sounds like you already have, but it's going to be hard once you start getting into a bigger distraction. So I guess my point is it sounds like you have done quite a bit of threshold building, structure, directional changes and stuff like that, but make sure that you're utilizing those directional changes in the healing and stuff. That's important. So when you're going out with him and you turn and you say Fletcher heel, like a lot of that is handling. It's a lot of handling timing and things like that, making sure that when you turn, like the video I just did with my board and trains at my new facility is a great example of that, where I'm going out and I'm showing people how to give a little bit of hang time. Some people, when they turn, they immediately nail their dog regardless of what the dog's doing. You're going to get a frustrated dog. They're going to start saying like, damned if you do, damned if you don't, this isn't cool. And then they're just going to react regardless. So just making sure when you go out, Fletcher heel, and you turn on your heels to go the other way at like a 180 degree, you're giving him that hang time to kind of commit to you. So then you can reward him. Yes, good heel, buddy. Good, good. And you can verbally pay him just like I just did. That's all he's going to need. And you turn again, and then maybe you turn the other direction. And that's just basic leash engagement. So keeping him engaged on you. Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. So it's a lot of like, if you bring your kids to Disney World, there's a lot going on around you, Mickey Mouse and Goofy and cotton candy and all this fun stuff, but they have to be engaged with you. Pay attention to me. This is where we're going. You know, things like that. It's basic engagement, just to make sure that they don't make a mistake and just to make sure that they're safe. And so when you're doing your basic engagement with him outside, you got to make sure you have your break as well. Do you have a break?
No, that's not, we aren't really like a break command to where it's like, oh, you're free and released from your command.
Right. Yeah. You don't have that. No. Okay. So that's something that you have to have, because right now you guys are saying, hey, clock in, but you're not clocking them out.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll build more frustration.
Yeah.
Especially as an 8-month-old shepherd, because you're saying work, dude, work or else you got to work. But you're not saying, hey man, good job, free, break.
Okay, so and then this break command is just kind of like after he, you know, was sitting, healing, doing whatever, it's just kind of like, here, just be a dog.
Exactly. So think about it like, again, it's like any type of psychology with kids too. It's like every single school, well, school's going to shit these days, but every single school back in the day had a recess, right? You got to give them a break. They can't just do that all day. They're kids. You know, you got an 8-month-old shepherd. He's not going to be able to heal. So if you're not working, you're breaking. And if you're not on a break, you're working. Right? So if you go out and you tell him, hey, buddy, this is what I want you to do. I want you to heal. And he's healing, and he can and will probably get punished if he doesn't heal. You have to be able to disengage him somehow with a verbal cue. So basically you're saying, Fletcher, heal. He's doing great. You stop. You put him into a sit. And then you kind of just, in your head, you go, that was great, man. Go over there and pee and poop. But you don't say anything. So then he can't distinguish clearly and capture a behavior well because you're not telling him, okay, break.
Okay.
So he might still think, well, do I heal? Do I not heal?
So then he doesn't know. You got to clock in, clock out.
So he doesn't then know he might not learn in as well, right? So like if he's, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, because
that makes sense.
That makes sense on like why we're teaching him these commands. And then like
sometimes he doesn't listen.
Yeah, he doesn't listen, or he's like looking at us like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know? Or he offers up other behaviors. He's like, I don't know what do you want.
Right. Yeah. And that will lend to frustration.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know. So that's what I'm saying is a lot of, if I were to give it a percentile, I think 40% of this problem is him not understanding what he can and can't do and getting frustrated because you're not having clarity and you're not compartmentalizing. This is what I want you to do. Okay, now be a dog. Because he has to be a dog. He's a puppy still, really.
Right.
And so you have to be able to say, okay, Fletcher, heal, which is, hey, buddy, work. You go out, you work with them, right? And they say, okay, break. And the difference between work and play will be predicated off of your obedience, how good you are at obedience. So if you're healing a dog, in the beginning, it's going to be for 5 steps. Fletcher, heel. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Break. Yes. Good job, buddy. You throw a ball. You break him out. Okay. Now, 2 weeks later, a heel might be for a whole block and then break. But you can't go out and just assume that when he's in gear, he can't get out of gear. It's unrealistic. It's unfair. It's like anybody else that's learning something new. Like, hey, man, you just learned how to run yesterday. Let's go for a marathon. What? That's not fair. I'll fail for sure. So you're like, hey, you know, you just ran a mile today. Tomorrow, let's try for a mile and a half. See what happens. And you're like, okay, that kind of sucked. Let's try a little bit over a mile, not a mile and a half. So my point is you incrementally build that out, but you have to have clarity. And I would pull back the reins and work on that at the house before you go out and try to work on it outside, like anything else. So all you would do is take whatever he likes. So when your voice inflection has a lot to do with this as well. So when you're going out, you're neutral. Fletcher, heel. It's not Fletcher, heel or Fletcher, heel, right? That's a cartoon character. It's like Fletcher, heel. So it's very neutral. I'm asking you. It's like, hey, can you pass me the pen? Fletcher, heel. You go out. Okay, you heal nicely. You did a couple directional changes. He's engaged. Good job. Fletcher, you don't have to sit. I'm just giving you an example. Fletcher, sit. Good sit. Fletcher, break. And then free. Like, you know, that's that. And what I usually do is I kind of tap the dog on the side and I say, hey, you're done. You're done. And then he can be a dog. And that break is, again, predicated off of you. So as he's going out and he's breaking and he's smelling and he's doing whatever, the only thing I don't allow on breaks are like things that we are fine. Again, just like with kids, go on recess, but no, you can't take a rock and chuck it at Timmy's head. I mean, it's recess. You still can't do that. So So when he's on his break, I mean, there's things still, like he's not to react and be a jerk, but he can be a dog and he doesn't have to be in heel. And I kind of just follow the dog around and give them their break. It's almost a reward in a sense. It's a reward for my dog. Like when I say break on a walk, they'll literally just run away. See you later. Go do what you want, you know? So anyway.
Break, like, okay, so obviously, like you said, we'll work on that inside before we take it outside. But then, like, say when we start taking it outside, because, you know, we have one of those dual leashes where, you know, the shorter end is on the prong and then the longer end's on his collar just in case, right? And I keep the lead close to me and short. So when we go into a break, should I make the lead longer to give him more, you know, normal time to, you know, sniff around, do all that stuff? Or
yeah, you could. I mean, you could do whatever, but my suggestion is to just get a safety clip and a 4-foot leash. That's it. It's all the setup you need. And then the safety clip will allow you to make sure that the safety clip attaches to your leash and then your flat collar. And then the leash goes on your prong. I have those on my website.
Yeah, that's kind of like what we have. The,
it's a...
The Lieberg or something.
Lieberg.
Like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a leather one. That
yep.
Has like, cool.
Yeah, perfect. That's it. Yep, good. Yeah, so basically you would... So all you would do is go out when you're healing with him. You don't have to give him more leash. You could kind of just follow him around, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So you just say break. So in the beginning, he's not going to know what it is. He's going to be, what the hell is that? So what I like to do is take a ball or take a treat or whatever, and I just kind of throw it. I say break, and I just start conditioning the dog. When I say break, you can move. Like you go into motion, and then I follow you around. And then what I'll do is I'll continue to mark it. I'm like, good break, buddy, good break. Like, yeah, you're doing good. I'm like, I'm just letting him know, hey, I'm letting you do this. I'm letting you do this. I'm letting you do this. I'm just letting him out. So it is a little bit confusing in the beginning because it doesn't, like I said, dogs don't. People are like, it's not going to make sense in the beginning, but as you condition, like you grab your leash, we're going for a walk. You grab your leash, we're going for a walk. You grab your leash, we're going for a walk. That's conditioning. So if you say break, 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 and you do that for a couple of weeks, your dog's going to realize that break means disengage, do what you want. That means it's my time. So I suggest just, again, getting like a ball or a treat or something and just throwing it in front of him and just disengaging, break, just letting him go.
Okay.
But what that does is, it sets you up for success because, again, if I wanted to go run a mile and a half, I'm not going to be able to do that over time if I'm new to it. So like with him, if he's out and you're trying to basically what you're trying to do right now is if you go out with him for 20 minutes and you don't have a break command, but you're asking him to heel, technically he's in a heel for 20 minutes, which I wouldn't do with any dog.
Okay.
So then you're getting frustration of, when am I working? Because what a lot of people do is, here's what a lot of people do, which is, again, creates tons of frustration, is they put a dog on to a heel, and then mentally, you're already breaking the dog. You're like, man, that was great. Do what you want. But you're not letting the dog know, on my terms, you can now break and do what you want. So then what happens is the dog kind of starts going in front of them. Mm-hmm. And then the owners don't care because they're like, yeah, no, you've done good enough. But then the dog's like, okay, now you don't care? I back there, I got punished for walking past your knee, but now I don't. Okay, this is weird. And then what happens is the dog starts pulling a little bit, and then we go bang, 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 and we heal the dog back. And they're like looking at us like, well, what? Well, I don't understand. 10 minutes ago, that was okay, and now it's not okay. And so that's where you're going to get frustration. And then more importantly, what you get is you get a checked out dog. They won't listen to you. They won't engage with you. They don't respect you. They don't look at you for direction because you make no sense. Because you're inconsistent and you don't have clarity, which then can create, again, that's where, like, Dante, perfect example.
Yep.
That dog is mainly reactive because he doesn't have clarity. So he's just, my parents don't know what to do. And this is with a lot of my clients. My parents don't know what to do, so I'm going to scare the crap out of anybody around us to get them away from us.
That's very accurate, yes.
Right? Because he's thinking like, these guys don't know what they're doing. I
have to in charge and take care of it.
That's right. And as an intact eight month old dog with some working lines, you know, in him, it's like, sky's blue for me. This makes total sense. So, but the other big thing, obviously that you guys were missing from the get go was accountability. and the ability to make sure that you're actually following through with the dog. So some sort of consequence with the dog. So when you say heal, that's what I'm saying, is he's got to know heal before you can correct him for heal, unless you're in an intervention stage, right? So like if a dog doesn't know leave it, but they're trying to kill a kid, or they're trying to kill a cat, or they're just doing something that they can never do, you're going to correct them. That's not unfair. That is fair, right? So anyway, when you're out with him, he's got to know heal and he's got to know break. That way, when you punish him for non-compliance of heal, it makes more sense. But what you haven't done is you haven't, up until recently, he's gotten away with so much because he hasn't been held accountable. Like I talk to people all the time and my dog is doing this. I've paid this amount of money. I'm now on the phone with you. My dog is doing this. What have you done about it? How are you punishing? How are you letting him know that that's not okay? And yeah. Usually it's, I tell him no, I shake my finger at him, all that stuff. And of course, it's just clockwork for me because I know the answer. I have to ask so I can make sense of why it's a problem. So, how is that working for you? Like, how is, you know, that understanding? So there's a little bit more to it. Like the dog has to know what you want him to do, but at the same time, even if he knew heal competitively and you weren't reinforcing, hey, you have to heal if you're not, the dog will start sliding out of control. And that's what's happened to you guys is in the beginning, you were only teaching him how to do things. You weren't able to not discourage things. You weren't able to teach him what he can't do. You only showed him, here's a cookie, good job. Here's a cookie, good job. Here's a cookie, good job. And if they didn't do something, maybe they jumped on somebody, you were screwed. Because the teacher that you worked with at the time doesn't believe in punishment ever. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in punishment. They would rather see your dog at 8 months spiral out of control and be a medicated puddle on the ground than correct the dog.
Yeah.
So you tell me like what's more inhumane. When the reality is one of the most natural things for dogs, like if your dog was sharking around another like big intact male, like that, there's gonna be a fight. And that other dog is gonna teach your dog like, no, you're getting corrected and you're not gonna like it, but you're not gonna do that crap again. Right? We get a dog that mounts another dog in daycare, maybe a newer dog that's like, hey, you know, and they're trying, and then the dog turns around, grabs that dog by the neck, pins it to the ground, makes it squeal, the other dog runs away and doesn't do it again. That's a correction. It's the most natural thing in the dog world, period. That's why the prong collar works so nice, is because you're not going to get on your hands and knees and go grab Fletcher by the neck and try to correct him. You're going to use a prong collar to communicate. It's easy peasy. So that's the other part of the big part of what's happening with you guys, is you've had no accountability. So you've been basically, when he does something wrong, you've been just biting your tongue to say like, this is wrong, but I can't do anything about it.
He just ignores it.
Right. Cause it does. So your voice doesn't have any accountability. So think about it like, so that's what builds confidence in dogs. That's what builds accountability. That's what builds respect. That's what builds, I don't know, so much. Like if I told you, hey guys, I'm going to be over at your house at 8:00 and I showed up at 8:30, 8:45, like every Monday, I'm like, I'm going to be over at 8:00, but I showed up late. Like you're not going to trust me to be there right at that 8:00. You know, it's just like, you never like do that. And it's the same thing with dogs. If you're like, hey, stop what you're doing. They're like, what's that? Because it's not being, there's nothing reinforcing your voice. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, go to your room. No. Go to your room. No. And then you walk away. The kid learns, well, I don't have to do that then. All I got to do is just say no, right? But if there's accountability where you're like, you go over and you grab their hand and you bring them to the room, or you say, okay, no more iPhone or no more friends or no more football or no more whatever. They're like, oh, sorry. Okay. Like you got to have that accountability. And with humans, and with kids and with us, like just same thing with coworkers. Like, hey, if you don't show up at 8:00, you're going to have to let you go. I need somebody to be here. I need to hold, like, there's got to be that accountability. There's got to be that fear. And I think, you know, in your case where you worked with a positive only trainer, they believe the exact opposite, where there should be no fear. There should be no stress. There should be no consequences. There should be no no's, which if we lived in that world, it would be utter chaos.
Yeah.
Unrealistic.
It's very unrealistic, and it gives you false hopes where you're a professional dog trainer and somebody like you guys goes to them and they say, all you got to do is ignore bad behavior and reward behavior good when it happens. It's like, it's crazy. It's borderline inhumane in my opinion. But that's why she threw up her hands and said, I can't deal with this. Go with somebody who's going to medicate your dog. Now, if she would have just said, hey, here's a guy down the road that can effectively, humanely correct your dog for the BS that he's doing because this is out of my comfort zone, that would have made way more sense. We wouldn't have been on the phone, I don't think. But I think that there's got to be... So anyway, that's the other big piece that you're missing is throughout the years... You're like, he's been doing all this bad stuff. But up until recently, you started correcting him and holding him accountable. So all of this is new for him. He's gotten away with so much for so long. And of course, you haven't wanted him to, because that's the confusion sometimes in these conversations is, I'm not saying you let him. I'm just saying you let him. you didn't really mean to spiral this, but you also didn't hold him accountable for things and weren't assertive enough when he did things that he shouldn't have been doing. So, you know, going like in that class, like if a dog were to go over and jump on another person's leg and like, you know, bite at their shirt and pull their shirt down and get them all muddy. And I were to go over and just grab the puppy and pull him down by, you know, by his fur of his neck. Like that wouldn't be okay for your other trainer. That's inappropriate. You can't do that to dogs. You just let them figure it out. Correct. Dogs are not, that's not how they learn. I mean, if you actually knew about canine behavior and you watched how they interacted with each other, both coyotes, wolves, dogs, feral dogs, domesticated dogs, working dogs, pets, that's how they learn. Like, let them figure each other it out. So anyway, so that's the big thing, I think, you guys, is you have to take all of the things that you've been kind of struggling with and using the prong collar to start reinforcing these things. And then I think right now, it's your training that you've been doing, especially for the fence stuff. The training that you've been doing with the fence stuff isn't adding up to your expectations. So my point is you need to work up your obedience really good enough to a point where you can start doing some like remote collar training, where you can start, because the reality is holding the dog accountable, making sure the dog understands that when you say come and they know come, they're going like this, na 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 boo boo, what are you going to do about it if I don't come? Because it becomes a currency game. You guys have already been seeing that. It's the same exact thing with kids. If he's on the fence barking at the other dog and you say, Fletcher, come, he's picking that $100 bill over what you have to offer, which is either nothing or very low currency of, well, if I come to mom, then they're going to pet my head. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go after this dog because this is more fun. This is addicting. This is a job.
Yeah, correct.
So that's where you have to interject. And the e-collar is the only thing in the world that you can use on a dog that gives you the ability to hold them accountable completely off leash. It's the only thing in the world you can use. But you can't just dive into it just using it that way. You have to introduce, I have a ton of videos on that and stuff. But those are the types of things that you, like, my point is you're not going to be able to do the type of training that you're doing right now successfully with that off-leash work because they're two separate things.
Okay.
So, like, get the foundation part in the controlled and then start to take it out and baby steps and, like, on the walk or other things and then...
Yeah, there's a process to introduce the remote collar. And you don't want to slap it on and just say, like, oh, I'm going to correct my dog off-leash. You want to teach the dog what it is. You want to work on all of it. I have so many videos on it. I would just recommend just go to my playlist on YouTube and just type in like e-collar introduction or whatever. And you'll see like how to introduce it, kind of the fundamentals. And you could probably, now that you know, just kind of searching for balanced dog trainers in your area to help you introduce the e-collar will be really helpful. But again, like that's something... I had a conversation yesterday and many times really is that's what people do is they like, my dog won't come off the fence no matter what I do. I'm like, yeah, because you can't touch your dog. Like you're over there just saying like Fletcher's going AWOL on the fence to another dog as an intact male, like rah, 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 going crazy.
Right.
And you're over there going, Fletcher, please.
Yelling at the top of our lungs, but that's just like...
But that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying is the comparison. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I know you're not actually whispering. I'm saying That's what he's hearing.
He doesn't give a care. Yeah.
So you have to be able to, so again, like the foundation as like a, let's say like a two week process would be introduce the e-collar. You'd go out, you teach him what stimulation is. You never correct him with it. You use low level stimulation. And then you start on the long line outside and then you just continue. And that will really be helpful. So again, you're countering same thing with the healing outside with reactivity. You're countering his reactivity with obedience. He's like, hey, there's a dog. Heal. Aw. Mm-hmm. Gotta heal, dude. Time to work. Let's go. Yeah, but. No. No, yeah, buts. Let's move it. Right? He doesn't get to make those decisions. He's too much dog for that. Now, if you had a little insecure, poorly bred German Shepherd that's like, hey, is that a dog? And they're insecure and they're nervous and they're fearful, you might want to encourage him to like you said, like the behavioralist was saying, is like he needs to be socialized. He doesn't need to be socialized. He needs to be taught what's right and wrong. And my fear with him is if you do start socializing him as an intact male and as pushy as he is, he's just going to get in a fight. Or he's gonna hurt another dog, because that's what they would do. Like if he went in and he started being like, I'm an intact 8-month-old shepherd. Like my name's Fletcher, right? And he's like all pushy and like, trying to, basically dominate the other dogs physically. And he's going over top of them. And then they're like, dude, get out of here! Boom! And there's a fight. Like that's so likely to happen because that's his personality, and because he's developing into this very pushy dog because of the lack of structure. Like he's just going to get into a fight. So he doesn't like socialization is important for humans, I think, especially as a dog that, with your dad, like again, when your dad came over, like if you had some sort of, I always tell people like the e-collar is like the big brother that's watching. Mm-hmm. So if you know that if a dog has been corrected off leash before, or they're like, oh, you can touch me from here. The whole world changes because mm-hmm. then they don't think they can get away with stuff, where they're like, I'm going to try to have a go at this. Cause a lot of like this stuff that Fletcher may be doing is just like, he's just like, I'm going to have a go. I'm bored, whatever. I don't know exactly. But again, like you can't, you have to also like be safe with him. Like if he's being reactive and he's being aggressive and he's doing all these things, like you have to make sure that you are almost following him around with the leash until you fully commit to off-leash control, because he's going to make, if he makes a bad decision, it's ultimately your fault because you let that happen,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to, like the only time that we have him off leash is we have him in the backyard and we'll have, dual balls and frisbees, just so that he can be a dog.
Right.
And, we're throwing one, he's bringing it back, he's dropping it, So that was my question. Like, if we're doing that, then should we just keep on, like, I guess it's 30-foot lead, since you were saying about the,
So we could grab him. If we need.
Yeah. I would keep him successful. Don't give him any error for error. Let it happen. Like you got to play zookeeper. You got to keep that pistol haltered. Don't let him make mistakes. Like if somebody's coming over and you're like, I don't really know how he's going to do. Don't let him do anything. You keep him on a leash. You work on your obedience. You work on your socialization. Like everyone thinks, including maybe your behavioralist that you had before, everyone thinks that dogs need to be in each other's faces and they need to sit in people's laps to be social. Like the dog being in the room with another person is social. Like that's being social. He doesn't have to go over and be best friends with them. So what I would be doing is say your dad comes over next week and you put Fletcher in on his prong collar and on his leash and, hey dad, how are you? Yeah, we're just doing some training with Fletcher. And you kind of let him soak there for 20 minutes, not really doing much. Then you say, okay, I'm just going to go put Fletcher in his crate in the other room. And then you go on about your day. So you kind of like let that happen. And then in the future you can say, okay, now that we're off leash, we can start doing some muzzle stuff. Hey dad, don't look at him. Don't talk to him. Don't touch him. There's so many different things and it kind of is a different can of beans. But, anyway, so I wouldn't give him any room for error, because it's kind of like if you taught him, cause you don't have the off leash accountability, essentially, if you've taught him what he can and can't do on the leash and you've held him accountable. I mean, dogs are opportunistic, especially the dog that you have at that age,
right? He's going to see what he can get away with. He's going to see what he can get away with. He's going to see what he can get away with. So if you tell him what he can and can't do, you know, and you say heal or leave it or whatever, and he's being held accountable and, you know, he's like learning. And then all of a sudden he has a go and you have no equipment on, you can't hold him accountable. He'll say, ah, I can get away with this without this on. You don't want him to do that. You want to just make sure that he's successful. And I think he's just gone. I mean, he's gone 8 months without punishment. He's gone 8 months with, I'm going to do what I want when I want. And yeah, you're going to yell at me, but you're not going to actually do anything about it.
Right. Okay.
So now you guys are flipping the script and now you're saying, actually, there is consequences now, man. Like, you can't go after my dad. You can't rip through the neighbor's fence. You can't react to somebody walking their dog that wants to walk their dog around their neighborhood. Like, that is inappropriate. We are not going to do that, because it's not only a selfish thing for you guys to say, I don't want you barking because it's annoying. You got to realize that he's working himself up so much that he's stressing himself up and his quality of life isn't good, because he's going out for a walk and he's seeing Jim and Sandy walking their puppy that they just got. And he's going, ah, nah, nah, nah. And it's like, what are you doing? So it's not like a selfish thing for you guys to do, but it's also for his benefit to say, man, you can't do this. This is crazy. You're stressing yourself out. Like, you don't need to do this. And you have to be that guiding beacon to teach him what's okay and what's not.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I was just going to say, we've started to muzzle train him.
Yeah.
I'm to the point of where it's strapped on him, but sticking his face in it, you know, with training.
Yeah, the muzzle's great. I would continue to muzzle him and condition it, you know, make it fun, put peanut butter at the end, let him lick it out, like, do that as often as you can. Because it's just like that extra piece of security for you. If you have a dog that kind of gets addicted to the fight like he has, and he's gotten away with it for so long, just in general, the muzzle's good just to have.
And I figure we're going to have to do it like for when he goes to the vet and stuff.
Right. Right. Yep. And that's normal.
At all. Okay. Well, as far as like next steps, I think you've given us some really good stuff to work on. So do people generally like do another consultation with you, or do
it depends on you know, the access that you have to dog trainers in your area, because some people just don't have. I mean, there's just Karen down the road that wants to be a dog trainer because she got sick of being at home all day and does treats and positive only. Like, if you only have that in town, like, yeah, you might want to consult with somebody like myself that can help you walk through other things. But if you can find a balanced dog trainer that utilizes equipment to help, you know, sculpt some of these behavioral cases, that's what I would recommend, is take what I've said, watch my e-collar videos, and work on the things that we talked about. And then, yeah, maybe find somebody that can help you hands-on would be great.
Yes. From that standpoint, then we basically have to interview them.
Yes.
Coach is going to be, because I really don't want to go down the path of now going to like a fourth trainer and it's like, oh, well, I don't really do this, but you know, it sounds like a German Shepherd. He needs to be on this medication and good luck.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an 8-month-old German Shepherd on medication, the dog has, I mean, the only thing that I would find that to be appropriate is the dog being like having really bad mental retardation and, you know, but that's not your case. You're not finding anybody that actually handles the problem. You're finding a bunch of people that are dancing around the problem, that their agenda goes against actually correcting the problem. And they're just like, here's some medication, because then the dog becomes a zombie and it makes things worse, because then they're more vulnerable and your dog's sleeping all day and so on and so forth. It's a nightmare. So I would just, honestly, now that you guys know, and that's a problem with like the, like dog owners, like you guys don't, you're not in the dog training industry and you don't see it and you don't realize that this is like a political battle that goes on. It's like a really big thing. So now that you guys know, all you have to do is go on their website and they will say, we believe in a positive only approach, and we don't believe in ever fear mongering or shutting dogs down into doing like, you'll immediately see that agenda. Oh yeah.
So like, we don't use e-collars, prong collars and all that. So that would be,
we don't use tools to train dogs. We just hope dogs shape up organically. Right. That's what people basically say. So, because, you know, like I said before, as an end note, is
we use a ton of positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement, by definition, in the four quadrants of science of how dogs learn, is positive reinforcement is to encourage behaviors to happen in the future. You cannot use positive reinforcement to get rid of a behavior. You can't. When you get a dog that's overpowering you and is taking over, you're probably likely working with somebody, as you did and as you found out, that just can't handle this dog, which is okay. But you're not, so you have to go out and call somebody, email somebody and say, hey, I just want to know your techniques and some of your methods on working with a reactive German Shepherd, because we've tried positive only training and it doesn't work for us and it doesn't work for a lot of millions of other people. We need a different route. And they will be able to say, we utilize tools when necessary, of course, or they'll say, nope, we don't use tools. We believe in this. And you say, okay. And then that's where you move on or you accept.
Okay.
All right, you guys. So the first question is from Pasco Pup. I come from a background of hound hunting, so I've been around shock collars my whole life, but never seen e-collar training like Tom does. Incredible. I've only used the collar as, hey, listen, with a beep equals a warning, a vibrate, better listen, and a shock equals correction. Is it possible to retrain a dog on the e-collar? Good question. And it's something that we often get, is if your dog is introduced to the remote collar strictly as an aversive or strictly as a punishment. First of all, there's a lot of people who do it that way, which again, I don't think is wrong or right. I just don't choose to do it that way. I have a different way of doing it. I introduce it very positive in the beginning and with lots of positive reinforcement to associate the dog with the stimulation before I correct them. And so what you would do is, if the dog is capable and willing and able, all you would do is recondition through positive reinforcement. So you have to, first of all, you have to get a remote collar that goes low enough to condition. So if you're working with a collar that has 0 through 10, chances are the lowest on a 1 is going to be like a 15 on my e-collar that I've done with Dogtra. So you got to make sure that you have a low enough level e-collar to do conditioning with it. The other thing is you're going to put it on for a week and not turn it on, and then you're going to go low. So on my unit, the Tom Davis 280C, it's going to be maybe starting off at a 4 and then asking basic behaviors with food. So go on my YouTube channel, see how I introduce it, and basically just restructure it that way. And the main thing is just tons of positive reinforcement for that. All right, so we got a lot of good reviews recently, so I appreciate all the love on the podcast. It helps this grow and kind of get the No Bad Dog movement message out there. The next question we have is Mosin. I think that's how you say it. Our biggest question right now is, when we're out and about, we often utilize heel command based on pure size, and these two, and so she has two dogs. And so I've actually already read this question. And so the question basically is, how do you work with two dogs at once on a heel? Should you put one in one hand or one in the other? Because I talk a lot about putting the dogs in one hand. What I would recommend is putting them separately on first of all, make sure that you can heel the dogs without each other. Don't try to go out and heel them together and learn how to do that at once, because it's going to be overwhelming. Your pressure and your timing may be off because you're too distracted by other things. So what I would suggest is train them and work with them way before separately to make sure that you're successful. And then the next thing you would do is kind of slide them into position in one side. If it's too much for you and the dogs are overwhelmed, or even the dogs don't like walking that close to each other, you can put the other dog on the other side, and that's totally fine. But that's what I would do. I would take it slow and teach them individually really good first, and then add them together and see if that helps with you. So Adam asks, thank you, Adam, for the review. Tom Davis rocks, 5 stars. Appreciate you, man. Tom, my question to you is, how do you introduce a new puppy to a current dog that is aggressive or reactive? Their current dog is 2.5 and they're bringing home a new female German Shepherd. First thing is, Adam, is you're going to have a lot of work down the road anyway, because you're introducing a puppy to a dog that is historically aggressive or reactive. So there's that. There is certain ways to do it, because if your dog is just reactive, you can certainly introduce the other dog slowly and help them coexist with each other without a ton of conflict. First things I would be doing is not making a big deal when the puppy comes home. So I would just put the puppy, I would do lots of barriers. So I'd be doing baby gates and X pens and kind of letting them get used to each other slowly. So this would be like the equivalent to putting a fish in a new tank. You let them sit in there for like
2 hours so they can get integrated into the water, and then they can go and live in that water. Kind of the same thing with dogs, except you would probably do this for 2 weeks, keeping them separate. I would limit the baby, oh, cutesy puppy stuff, because it's going to probably piss your other dog off. So just making sure that you're leading with leadership, training them together with two different people. So start inside very slow, keeping them separate, having them sniff each other through the crate. And then second to that, you would start working them structurally outside together. So you can take your puppy out, maybe do some luring with some food, start teaching some behaviors, introducing the leash pressure, all that stuff, and then working the other dog if you have another person as well. So kind of getting them to work together. Muzzle training your other dog wouldn't be a terrible idea once you start making the next steps to have them without the barriers. And once they're doing well on the fence and on the gate with each other, the muzzle would be keeping the puppy safe once you start kind of removing that barrier. I'm going to get into one more. And then again, if you guys want to ask questions for me to answer next time, all you have to do is go and review the podcast and leave your question within your review. This is from me, 123456. This is a dog trainer that is, as a dog trainer, asking another for advice. How do you cope with training clients who either are not progressing or they're not progressing in their training? So this is, what do you do with clients who aren't listening, essentially? Well, what I do is I'm very clear up front about what dog training is, and what we're gonna do as a teacher is our job is to teach them how to train their dog. Our job isn't necessarily to train their dog. So I think a lot of communication up front is huge. And we also have a contract that people sign when they sign up with us that we state that we are not responsible for their dog's progress in their training. We are not responsible for going home and working with their dog. They are solely responsible to make sure that they know what they need to do moving forward. And so our consultations that my trainers do are very clear with that up front, because that eliminates some of the problems that you may have in the future. And so anyway, that would be my suggestion to you, is to really be upfront and candid and honest in the beginning to let people know the expectations. And I just tell people if they're not progressing, I test them too. So when they come in for the session, I say, okay, I want to see what you worked on since last time. If they don't progress and they haven't done leash pressure and sit and they're still back, I tell them straight up, hey, just so you know, we're going to do this session again, and we can't move past unless you go home and do your homework. Because the hour I spend with you throughout the week and I don't see you again for another week or 2 weeks is nothing compared to what they need to be doing at home by themselves. So I think honesty and holding them accountable is huge. And I hope that helps. And again, we'll talk to you guys next time, next week, or maybe later this week on the podcast. Thank you for listening. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.